My name is Ryan Luke Winslade, and I am a PK and middle child. I know what it's like to be a misfit, an oddball, a weirdo, but I'm okay with that. If you're like me, you are most certainly welcome. Even if you're not, you'll hopefully enjoy yourself here on Pastor's Middle Kid anyway. We'll talk about stuff and look at things a little differently. All right, let's get started. Welcome to episode number 53 of Pastor's Middle Kid. My name is Ryan Luke, and it is great to have you listening, as it always is. I really enjoy when you choose to listen to what I have to say, even if you're just tuning in to listen to what the guests have to say, because consequently it means you have to hear my voice, and I think that inflates my ego a little bit. I don't know if that's healthy. Maybe not. I have Tristan Harris today on Pastor's Middle Kid once again. I have chosen to have him back because we didn't get through to talking about everything we wanted to last week. Instead of making it a part one, part two type of thing, I'm wanting to make this one a completely new, completely different episode to the last one. And actually, it's also because, if you remember, I finished the last one by saying I have to go talk to Fiona. We have a call scheduled. So we didn't actually record a second half then. So this was actually a completely new recording, and I hope that you're going to enjoy it just as much as, if not more than, last week's one. It does get a little bit wordy musically, so if you're not so inclined, then maybe some things might go over your head, but hopefully you'll be able to understand almost everything. Well, let's get right into the favorite segment of the show, and that is Walking with Frodo.
Smoke rises from the Mountain of Doom.
Halt. Mr. Frodo!
Walking with Frodo.
I wish the ring had never come to me.
I haven't read too much in the last week because I recently rediscovered my love for the Gut Check podcast and started listening to that from episode one again. They're at episode 65, so I've got a little bit to catch up on. It's very good. If you haven't heard of the Gut Check podcast, check it out. All right, I'm in chapter 3 of The Return of the King, called The Muster of Rohan. This, as I'm sure you can make out from that title, is all about when the Riders of Rohan get together to help out at the Battle of Minas Tirith, which is where all the forces of Mordor go, except for the ones that are left over at the Black Gate later on. But anyway, we don't worry about them. I've read through the chapter called The Passing of the Grey Company, and that's when Aragorn meets up with a bunch of the other Dunedain, and they go through the Passage of the Dead, and they enlist the help of one certain ghost army. It's pretty exciting times in The Lord of the Rings. I'm on page 777, and I'm looking forward to what is to come. This week in music, we're going to be listening to a little bit of Emery, which happens to be my favorite band. And the album that we're going to showcase here is called You Were Never Alone. It is their 2015 release. I absolutely love it. I think it's brilliant musically. And the arrangements that Matt Carter does of the songs and Toby Morell's raw creativity are a winning combination in my books. This song is called Rock Pebble Stone. It's the first song from the album. It actually doesn't have any distortion on the guitars, which is something a little bit different for Emery, and there's no screaming in it. It's not aggressive at all. So if you don't really like screaming, you might still like this song by Emery. It's called Rock Pebble Stone. We'll finish this episode with The Less You Say, which is another fan favorite from that album. Here is Tristan Harris talking about all things musical and having some fun while we're at it.
Son of a father, my mother.
Welcome back.
Yes.
To your back-to-back appearance on Pastor's Middle Kid.
Oh.
You are the very first person to do a solo back-to-back. Yeah. We've had people like, I think, Kayla Norris and Austin Wright and other people that have done a back-to-back, but as part of a group or a duo. So you're the first person that I have back on by popular demand. And by that, I mean I was the only one that wanted you back on.
People were just raving.
Yeah, I mean, at time of recording, I saw that about 70 people or so have listened to our last one, which was nice. Something that wasn't that nice about the last one was that we didn't get around to talking about everything that we wanted to.
True.
We got a little bit carried away talking about our lady friends. Mm-hmm. So, this week on Pastor's Middle Kid, on episode 53, I'm going to talk to you about music producing, which you haven't really done yet, but you are extremely passionate about, and perfect pitch, something that you have.
A superpower.
And we're actually going to play a game with that later.
Oh, no.
Okay, so, first of all, music production. What is it?
For me, music production is, well, in a literal sense, it is producing sounds and music, essentially. I don't know.
Music producing is producing music. Okay, that makes
creating,
sense.
Creating. I don't know. For me, I guess it's taking something and making it the best version it could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a sense, I guess that's what a producer... his role is in the studio, is just listen very intently to a song and hear the direction it's going, mm-hmm. and think very analytically about what's missing, what needs to be put in, what needs to be taken out,
mm-hmm.
in a song. And I guess I've always just had a natural ear for that kind of thing, and that's what producing music is producing music, essentially. Producing it and hearing it and creating it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you and I have both taken the School of Music Admissions, and so we both recorded an EP as part of a group, Ransom Mystic, and then Arba Lungs for You. During that time, we had Stevie Lujan, who was the school leader, as well as a feature artist on both of the albums, acting as a music producer.
Yeah.
For us in the studio, he would listen to our songs right before we went in to record, and he'd say, maybe sing that like this, or take out that section, or change the way you say that, or put this chord in there instead. And then he was quite, pardon the pun, instrumental in sorting out what was to be played. And I understand that for you, when you guys recorded for Arba Lungs, you kind of were Stevie's understudy. Is that kind of what you were doing? You were kind of, you were there, you were observing the process and participating a little bit?
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely took more of that role.
Yeah.
As far as producing, Stevie definitely was there during the whole recording process for everything. More as an encourager, though, I would say.
Mm.
He still played the same role. Like, he still was saying those same things, like, hey, like, you could probably sing this better, or play that better, maybe you could add this or sing it like this. But for me, the difference was I was actually creating sounds, and I heard things that needed to be there. And
so you were hearing things that weren't there, that needed to be there.
Yeah. And it's just a superpower.
It's an intuition.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I can hear a song in a sort of skeleton form and then start fleshing it out as the recording process goes along and say, like, hey, well, this, you know, could use electric guitar here and the drums could get big here, or like, hey, we could use a melodica at this random part and it'd sound really cool. And like, I'm also a percussion guy. I love when a song has a shaker or tambourine.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, when we were recording in New Zealand for the Arbor Lungs album,
mm-hmm.
we actually used a tray of cutlery as a ring, as a like a tambourine instrument, as well as a tambourine in the cutlery drawer. We took the entire drawer mm-hmm. and shook it like a tambourine, and it's actually on one of their songs. I actually mentioned this to you in,
yeah.
in a previous podcast we did, and that was like so... like mix of like hilarious but such a cool like creative idea.
Yeah.
And that was not my idea but Pete's actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just cool, like the different sound you got. And Pete also was, he was our engineer, but
Pete would come up with something like that.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's amazing.
His name is Pete Wood.
Pete Wood was the engineer who recorded. Do you record your album as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, he recorded both the School of Music and Mission
complete
albums.
Legend. As they say,
legend.
Hebrew.
Yeah, he was incredible. And he definitely heard things that I wouldn't hear, or mm-hmm. that Stevie wouldn't hear. And I guess also vice versa. Like, Stevie heard things that I wouldn't hear, or that Pete wouldn't hear, or mm-hmm. I would hear something that they wouldn't hear. And it was just kind of awesome bouncing ideas off with those three guys. And
yeah.
It's what happens when you got three producers who all have different styles and different backgrounds
mm-hmm.
come into a room and be creative together. It's amazing. And the finished product just really shows that. And mm-hmm. I like ambience, so I always try to add in a little bit of ambient sound mm-hmm. to whatever song I do, because I just like the feel of depth
mm-hmm.
in a song. And I think awesome. It really resonates with people, even if it's like underlying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like people can...
Like crickets and...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like people can, like... Even if they don't know what's there, they feel it, you know? Mm.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. that's sort of how I approach producing. Is like, things that you wouldn't hear if you were just a normal listener.
Yeah.
You know?
If you were there in the studio, you wouldn't hear everything that exactly. is there in the recording.
And there are things in the recording that... And I think that's my favorite part about, like, some songs is, like, I listened to it a few times and there's different parts in it that I was like, oh, I didn't hear that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I love doing that. This is such an such a funny episode.
Yeah.
I feel like some people are like, what are they talking about? This is way over my head.
Was the Arbor Lungs EP, the Greenhouse EP, was that the first in-studio producing that you've done?
Yes, I would say in a professional sense, mm-hmm. Where we were actually at a time limit and we were paying someone
yeah.
to record
mm-hmm.
our music. I've done producing and recording in the past with friends and at home and by myself, and never to this degree of professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
I think this time, like, and yeah, just so many cool things. And just sort of, you know, like in the studio back home or at home, I would do all the parts and
mm-hmm.
Produce all the music. Whereas this time around, it was different because we had a band
yeah.
who, and each individual wrote a song
mm-hmm.
and I'd play my part. And I feel like that's usually how it goes in a band in the studio. It's like mm-hmm. you play your part and then you're done.
Yeah.
Right. So, but yeah, it was, it was good fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I prefer real studio over home studio.
Yeah.
Oh
my goodness, yeah.
And just having more people there, it's just really fun. It makes it, yeah, more enjoyable for me
mm-hmm.
to have more people there and to bounce ideas off of.
Mm-hmm. You and I both have a background in this home studio mm-hmm. type of thing.
Mixcraft, baby.
Mixcraft, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been using Mixcraft 6 for the last 3 years. More than that, four years? I don't know.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous. 4 years now.
It's easy. It's user-friendly.
It is very user-friendly. It cost about $60 for me. I'm put in this interesting situation where I'm working next to Jason Beck, who is using Reason, and he has this top-of-the-range equipment.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there with Mixcraft, which cost me $60, a MIDI keyboard I got for free, which has yeah. 2 octaves. No capability to plug in a microphone or a guitar lead of any kind.
You have 2 octaves?
I know. I should be thankful, shouldn't
yeah.
I? Yeah. That's a whole 15 white notes.
I have 8 keys.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh, man. It's... It's humbling.
Yeah.
For sure. And it makes me realize how... I guess it makes me dream of the potential that I have. But at this stage of life where I can't buy anything, really, I am forced to make do with what I have. And that's kind of been the story of my life up to now. With certain exceptions, but most of the time it's been the low grade quality, and then you just get really good at that.
Yeah.
And then eventually you upgrade and it's incredible, and then you realize that it's still 7 tiers below the top of the range.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually, believe it or not, I was really good at Microsoft Paint. I was really good at Microsoft Paint. Now, the listeners won't be able to hear this, but I actually have the capability here in my studio to show Tristan some pictures that I drew on Microsoft Paint as a 14-year-old.
I'm so lucky.
Now, Tristan, do you like Pokemon?
I do.
Okay, wait, wonderful.
Which gen?
First.
Yes.
Great. Later. Here we go. So, my whole thing with Microsoft Paint is that it's so much better than people said that it was. It's so much better than what people did with it. And really, I believe that because of it was the only thing I had. And so I would spend hours every day drawing pictures like this. Hold on, it's coming up. It's loading. Here we go.
Gotta catch them all, man.
That's Ash Ketchum throwing a Pokeball.
Giant head.
Yeah, giant head. Now, that is... the proportions are slightly out. And I'm sure this is riveting
but still,
podcasting for people at home. but that was me as a 14-year-old. And I'll put a couple of these photos up on Pastor's Middle Kids Facebook page. So you should go like that, and then you'll be notified of when I've put them up, and
that's
they're pretty good.
Though.
Yeah, wow. I know. You didn't know you could do shading on Microsoft Paint. Well,
no.
at that stage, that was on a Windows 98 computer, and I actually had to darken the color of the paintbrush and then draw a separate line and then fill in that gap with that same color. That's how I did shading. Now, there's some Pokeballs, the big Pokemon sign, and then that. I am so proud of Electrode and Voltorb. Right there.
It's even got like the marks and they have on them all the time.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah. Anyway.
And the glare. You have glare.
I have glare. I have shading. I've got character in the eyes and everything. That was me as a 14-year-old. I mean, just like the guy in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I got better.
Yeah.
I mean, I reckon on Microsoft Paint, even now, I could draw something that is internet comic book grade. I reckon I could do it.
Yeah.
But that there is it's the story of my life as an artist, having low quality and needing to make the best quality that I can with it.
Yeah.
And not allowing bad equipment to be an excuse for poor art.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm in at the moment, this season of life, which has lasted almost 23 years.
Yeah.
Maybe one day I'll get out of it, but maybe I won't. But
yeah.
What I'm getting at here is that I have a background in home studio stuff.
Yeah.
And I've recorded my own EP of spoken word hybrid orchestral Zelda songs.
Incredible.
Which you...
It was incredible.
You listened to last week.
All mixcraft, all virtual instruments.
Yep.
Recorded on a very low-end mic.
Yep.
Very good.
Yep.
I thought it was incredible. If you haven't listened to it... Do you have it on Spotify, bro?
No, I don't have it on Spotify, but I have it on Bandcamp for free.
Bandcamp.
So if you want to go to ryanlukewinslade.bandcamp.com, you can get the album The Annals of Time, not The Annals of Time.
No.
The Annals of Time.
Yeah.
For free, and I think you can even pay what you want if you want to pay anything.
Donate.
Yeah, you should donate towards
to
me
it.
Getting some.
So we can get really Mixcraft 7.
That's right.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
You gotta be low grade, but you gotta be the best low grade.
That's right. You know? Even low grade can upgrade, right?
But seriously, amazing album, amazing music. I was really impressed, especially from our producer standpoint. It's really well mixed. The spoken word is wordy, but it should be because it's spoken word, and it's and it's amazing. It's, you know, thought through, and especially the music is very, I would say, whimsical.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, for the people listening, let's give them a taste of this album. Mm. I'm gonna give you now about 10 seconds of each of the 5 songs. They're based off of the temples that you play through as an adult in Ocarina of Time on the Nintendo 64. Or the Nintendo 3DS if you were a younger person. So here are some snippets from these songs, and I'll explain them briefly right after this.
Snickering ghosts greet me and whisper every name I detest. So much for a welcoming party. Take my stance and twirl with the flames. They lick their lips as they drool on the names of their victims.
I spit in their face.
Let's finish this dance. The burning tongues shit out of dirge.
My thoughts are swimming like a sleepy fjord, as my shadow betrays me and unsheaths its sword. The darkness within me
works through Hades unhindered. Between the screech of ghosts and scraping blades, I see naught but shadows, long, lingering shadows.
Frantic, I endure gale force winds and fiery glares, stumbling through doorways and downstairs.
I was a boy, nay, a young man, up the way before him as a charter of land. Within my hand I held the call to stand courageous, bold. I was
so the way that I wrote them, and I started telling you about this last week, but then I got distracted, or we started talking about something else.
Yeah.
I wrote down all the words, and I didn't have any idea what the music was going to be to go with them, because the spoken word can be standalone.
Yeah.
I can just stand there with a camera or just recording into my crappy microphone and try and paint these pictures with my words. Or you can let music help.
Yeah.
So what I did was, first of all, I chose a beat. Mm. I chose a time signature, and I chose a driven beat to go with the flow of the words. And then after that, I listened to the soundtrack music from each of the temples over and over and over to get that instrumentation as well as the melodies and stuff into my very being.
So cool.
And then I allowed them to be inspiration, not lifting them in any way, although I did use some sound effects from the game. Sorry, Nintendo, I didn't ask your permission, but hey, no one's bought it yet, so you can't sue me anything.
Could you imagine you just got sued by Nintendo?
Yeah.
Low grade as you.
$80,000. Oh! Imagine what I could have done with $80,000. I could have bought Mixcraft 10.
Mixcraft 10. It's not even out yet.
Yeah, I know.
You could have made it.
I could have bought Mixcraft.
Yeah.
The company.
Yeah.
Acoustica. I could have done it. Anyway, so I built this stuff from scratch, and it was all ideas, and I chose every music key based off the color that I saw in my brain when I thought of the music key, which I color coordinate. And I found out that you do that too.
I do.
But we do it slightly differently because everybody's color associations are different. So let's talk, I guess.
Let's talk about colors.
Let's talk about synesthesia.
Yes.
Which is this overlapping of the senses, and you can see sounds and you can hear tastes and then other crazy stuff like that. I definitely have, if I have it at all, it's a very, very, very moderate case of it, which is basically just color coordinating things in my brain, like letters and words music keys, music notes, numbers, all that type of stuff. And you do something similar?
Yeah, I associate with color a lot.
Okay.
Based on tunings.
Okay.
But also keys as well, mm-hmm. I would say. Like, for example, I understand that G for both of us is a darker green.
Like a forest green.
Yeah, forest green.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so weird to say out loud, but it's kind of mm-hmm. cool to reciprocate that with someone. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just partly about being creative
mm-hmm.
and just having to, and making sense of it in your mind, of like, okay, G is green. And like that, like kind of compartmentalizes it in your brain.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, G is green. C is yellow for me.
Okay.
D is the key, D major is, or D minor even, is red.
Yep.
And so on. And so that's just sort of how I guess, make sense of it in my brain, you know?
Like, yeah,
just,
yeah.
Yeah. It's so weird to say. People mm-hmm. are being weird. That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but I think that's just partly about being a creative person.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding music. And
mm-hmm.
I think I'm better off for it as a musician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm, it's a way that I connect with God. brief story explain. To explain that.
Yeah.
When I was on my discipleship training school and we were praying about where we were going to go on outreach, we had options like Germany, the Netherlands, Finland, Sweden, Japan, Australia, or Norway. And I ended up going to Norway, in case the listeners didn't know. Tristan knows because I can speak more Norwegian than he can.
Okay.
And he's
okay.
engaged to a Norwegian.
Yeah, cool as hard today, Brian. No, Brian.
Brian.
Brian, that hurt you. Oh, sorry.
It's a wound long held. I'm trying my best to let it go. Men jag har varit I Norge I 2013.
Mm-hmm. I hate you so much right now, Brian. So mad at you.
Oh! Okay. I was praying about where to go. We were given 10 hours.
Yeah.
It was from the afternoon to the morning. And I was praying about it with my friend. And this was with only a couple hours left. So it was in the morning. And I asked God where he wanted me to go. And I didn't feel like I was getting a clear answer. I prayed. And in my mind's eye, God showed me the color Norway, which doesn't make much sense.
No, I got it.
But it's a mixture of greens and blues. And really, I saw the name Norway in all these different colors. And it was quite beautiful, but also very strange. And so I Googled Norway. That's all I put in. And I saw this picture of mountains and a fjord that were exactly the same colors as what I'd seen in my mind's eye.
Wow.
So that was a way that God was able to connect with me through this overlapping so of senses.
Cool. I definitely think synesthesia is a way of God connecting to us, mm-hmm. for sure. I think it's a characteristic of God, actually.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, and I think God... God speaks to me like that, too, actually. I think I color code everything. Norway to me is white, because God in a vision showed me Norway and it being white.
Cool.
And which is funny, because it was white, and then there's a blonde Norwegian woman who was in a white dress, and in this vision I married that white blonde woman in a wedding dress. And
you married this white woman in the white dress in the white country.
Yeah, honestly. And it was before I even met or not met, before I even dated Betty.
Yeah.
Like, I was, I had this vision, God gave me this vision of this white country,
mm-hmm.
and this, it was snowing, and
there's
this bride in the, like, whitest dress, and I thought it was a metaphor, because God was teaching me a lot about love at the time.
Yeah.
And not to go back into, I want to keep on
synesthesia. What we talked about last week, yeah.
But it was just cool how God like really spoke to me and like highlighted Norway in white.
Yeah.
And I think and like it just goes back to music of like how I feel like I connect with it better because I color code it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just, it's just the, and the feel too, like I feel, physically feel something when I listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, what a great thing, synesthesia.
Yeah, yeah. I knew a guy in Canberra who had synesthesia, and for him, I got talking to him about it one day, and for him it was less associating colours and more characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So translating that into music, the note on the in any key C, he didn't see it as a colour. For me, I see it as a light green, which is different to yours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we have different reasons for that association, but for him, he saw the note C as a very sturdy, steadfast person. Somebody that you could always rely on and all that type of thing. And then G was something different. And so he went through this scale and talked me through his different character associations. I thought it was absolutely fascinating. Okay. So now that we are done with that tangent, let's bring it right back to home recording.
Mm.
When did you start doing it?
Yeah.
And how good did you get?
So I started probably when I was, I want to say 15.
So that was probably Mixcraft 3 at the time.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, my first audio recording was at school, and it was Audacity.
Yes.
And
beautiful.
It was terrible. I covered the Almost Say This Sooner.
Okay.
And it was just a terrible cover. I tried screaming in it.
Yeah.
And like, I was a 15-year-old screaming, right? So my voice is changing and it sounds, I wish I had it. I would have shown it to you. It's awful. And but I loved it, and I was like, that's amazing, like how you can do that. Like, and like,
I just sang, but there it is there on the computer, and I can listen to it again.
And what is this technology? And from there, like, and then I was like Googling programs. And I was like, oh, what's Pro Tools? And then I looked at it, I was like, $800. And I was like, I have no job. So then I was like, free Pro Tools.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that came up was a Microsoft program released through Audacity called Mixcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to Mixcraft, because actually I learned quite a bit about music and about recording and producing through that program. And
me too, obviously. Yeah.
And I started using, well, what I first started doing, I had a crappy little Rock Band mic. And when I say Rock Band, I mean Rock Band, the game that where you play fake instruments and you go
Xbox, PlayStation game. Yeah.
And it was a USB mic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I plugged it in my computer, it recognized it as an actual microphone. And then I started recording random little worship songs. I would grab my crappy little acoustic guitar, record that, drench it in reverb, because I found a reverb and I was like, that's so cool. and then I would sing very closely to this mic.
Yeah.
And I had no idea about pop filters or compression or anything.
Yeah.
And I heard my voice. I was like, that's amazing. Like, this is the best singing I've heard anywhere. And like, I thought I was the coolest.
I have the ever. Best voice ever.
Yeah. I thought I was so cool. I was like, Dad, you have to listen to this. And he was like, that's you recorded it. And like, that's what he said. You recorded it. And I was like, Yeah, I did. And I was like, I thought that was like a compliment. But then, like, I listened back to it actually recently, one of the recordings. And it was so terrible. It was like the More I Seek You or something like that.
Okay,
and
yeah.
I actually have it on my phone. But
oh, could you play a few bars?
I couldn't right now.
Oh.
But because on my phone is the SIM card is not working, so I'm actually locked out of my phone.
Oh.
Anyway,
next week
yeah. Next week when you have me back on
for the third time in a
row, back to back.
Yeah,
I'm just the only one who come on your podcast now, eh?
Yeah, you've basically become a second host.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, or just a permanent guest.
Yeah,
so I'm always asking you questions, but you're on every week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got really good with Mixcraft. I got really comfortable with it. It was a pretty easy format, record, stop.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned how to edit, you know, cut things and press repeat. Like, it was actually really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just how I started discovering how to record. And it was just how I learned music. Like, it started from nothing. Like, and I just sort of like was like, oh, this is cool, and I'll keep trying things and trying things, and like, that didn't sound good. but I'll try it this way, and then, oh, that worked, and it was just a bunch of, like, you know, trying and failing and succeeding, and, but it got to a point where I was actually started using what is called virtual instruments, and Mixcraft has, a library of just different types of every instrument, from your woodwinds to your brass to your drums to your guitars and everything. And at that point in my life, I was really into metal music.
Yep.
And I started recording these hardcore metal songs that were terrible, but I thought they were awesome. And it was just like humble beginnings.
Yeah.
And through that, then I started recording using the Rock Band mic, putting it up to an amplifier.
Yep.
And started playing real guitar over these fake tracks. And I was like, this is amazing. And it actually started to get there, because a lot of metal bands use samples and virtual instruments anyway.
Yeah.
So it started to sound kind of legit.
Yeah.
And then I got into more of the dynamics of the recording, the EQing, the reverberations, the delays, the compression, the mastering, and all those kind of things, and sort of learning how to do them, Googling and YouTubing things, and learning a really kind of do-it-yourself way. And Mixcraft was the most user-friendly thing, and I kind of stuck with it throughout, and to this day I still use it for some of my recordings, just if I need a quick demo. It's a very easy program.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, just it started from really crappy recordings to less crappier, legit-sounding recordings.
And yeah.
It's still, it's what you get with Mixcraft, right? Because it is a free program.
Yeah, I know all about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you get what you pay for, essentially.
I mean, I paid $60, so
you get
I get $60 of quality.
Yeah. So with that being said, check out his album.
Yeah.
It's really good. $60.
But you consider a $60 investment versus an $800 investment for Pro Tools or something like that, and or even more these days. Yeah. But you know, you make do with what you can afford.
Yeah.
Until you can afford more, and then you make do with that, and then you're just maxing out everything, and then you're selling albums left, right, and center. And the demos that I heard of yours, I was kind of blown away by.
Really?
Did you record those drums, or were they virtual?
They're virtual.
Okay.
Sorry,
for people that are listening that don't care about this. Well, sorry.
Yeah.
did you work with the Velocity to get it sounding how you want it? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was also a cool thing that I started doing. I started the Velocity, the rate at which you hit something, the hardness of it. And it great for snare rolls, right? Because for a snare roll, you accent certain hits. And so it was great for that. When I learned to do that, it again sort of revolutionized it in my mind of there's a whole new thing I can do now. And I did that with the kick too, and it was a great way of adding a little more dynamic to songs and a build and to very heavy parts and
you had some good breakdowns going. breakdown after breakdown.
Yeah, that's
So home recordings. What did you graduate to after you maxed out Mixcraft?
Oh, I moved to Reaper.
You went to Reaper after that? I actually went from Reaper to Mixcraft because I didn't know how to use Reaper properly.
Yes, I'm trying to become as professional I can be without taking an actual course in recording.
Yep.
Reaper is like the slower cousin of Pro Tools, and I'm starting to learn how to use some of their it's just better sounding quality, essentially. Yeah. It's the recording process is a little harder and not as user friendly because you gotta kind of work the ins and outs of the system, and there's certain ways of minimizing certain tasks that you can do and shortcuts and all that, but whereas Mixcraft, everything's just out there. It's labeled. Here's this and this and this effects, and whereas Reaper is gotta dive into it a little more. But from what I've heard so far of the recording, and also I graduated to different mics, and I thank God no longer use the Rock Band mic.
Yeah.
And now I'm using just pencil mics and AKG mics, like.
And you plug them into an interface, like.
Yeah, I also have a interface here.
Okay.
I have actual studio monitors and studio headphones.
And so you're making your bedroom, which used to be my old bedroom, into a little home studio.
Where everything's virtual because we have like 100 neighbors and we get annoyed really easily. Yeah, I'm converting that.
And 100-year-old neighbors.
True. Ron's just outside.
Yeah.
He'll be all right. I brought some all the way from Canada to Australia. I brought monitors and interface, cords, mics, all the steel, everything I would need to sort of, you know,
do good quality demo home recordings.
Exactly. And hopefully soon, once I get the rest of the things I need, including a desk to put all my stuff on, then I can start recording people on bass, which is actually a passion of mine. And
good.
Part of the reason why God has called me back here, I believe, is to start recording and producing music for other creative people, musicians on bass, and sort of give them an outlet to take their songs that they have or ideas and flesh them out in an actual decent home studio and for free, right? Whereas because I think a part of my producer mindset is that I can see the potential in a song.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually working on your upcoming music. We don't have the studio quite set up, but I've heard it, and I'm really excited to get going on that.
Yeah.
You should tell people a little bit more about your album.
Yeah. For the people listening to Pastor's Middle Kid, this is an announcement. I guess the first announcement of this. I've been working on for the last couple of years an album that is a concept album. Debating whether or not to say what it's a concept album of. Let's leave it for now.
Yes.
I'm working on an album of songs inspired by a certain series of books, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, and using not only drawing information from them, information, I guess, if I said any quotes or anything, but allowing that to spark my imagination and do the same thing that I did with my own Zelda songs.
Yeah.
Put melodies and instrumentation and everything around it.
Yeah.
And even just from talking to you about them and showing some of the songs to you, you were saying, I can see this happening, and
the first thing I always hear is the drums. Because that is what is the backbone of the song to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing is like, okay, how can we put drums to this?
Yeah.
Because then things like electric guitar and bass will all come second to that and under the drums, I would say. But I always hear a little bit of, you know, different melodies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I got really excited when you showed me this song, because I totally saw like particular drums, like things that I heard that I was like, yes, this would go good here. And it wasn't like, you know, 4/4 drums where it's like boom boom kr. It was actual like I saw like different accented parts and cool like cross-stick kind of stuff and tom stuff, and it was really cool hearing your album. And you have a producer mindset as well, so I figure when we get in the studio we'll have a good back and forth of what we think the song should be,
yeah,
what direction it should be going, and I'm really stoked to get working on that.
Yeah, so am I.
I've seen the lion, no one believes me. They think I'm lying, but I'm all about honesty. The look of distaste down knees. Seems it's been so long since winter that this land is overgrown with weeds.
Well, we'll we'll leave the rest to your imagination, listeners. Yeah. And we will now move into to talking about a little something called Perfect Pitch.
Yes.
Perfect Pitch is something that I've always been rather envious of people with. Perfect pitch is the ability to not only recognize, but also to sing or identify any note without a reference pitch. That means you can pick up a guitar and play along with anything that is that you're hearing on the radio, anything that somebody's singing walking down the hallway, without really hitting any bad notes.
Essentially, yeah. Because when people think of perfect pitch, they think, like, I can hear a note and be like, oh, it's this note. It's this. It's perfectly this note. And, like, I can tell you
how many maybe with ear training you
and
could.
And with ear training, I probably could. And I have done that in the past. Mm. Like, my ear's been better, I guess I could say.
Yeah.
But I guess perfect pitch for me is just having a good ear, being able to play along. And I do like listen to songs and I can tell you the chord progression and the key that it's in and essentially play along with it on various amount of instruments. And but it's also something with drums too, like I can hear the drums as well and I guess regurgitate that and not instantaneously.
Are you any good at beatboxing?
No, not as good as Austin. And then he's like, I listened to that and I was just like, oh my gosh.
Okay, to reiterate how incredible this is, the other day I was working on the on rearranging the pentatonix arrangement of Little Drummer Boy, which is fairly amazing, and Tristan walks up and goes, oh yeah, oh, and he started singing in exactly the right key, and it frustrated me so much because I'd just been working on that and adjusting all the notes for people that your average person could sing, because not all of us are professional singers. And Tristan walks up and just starts singing an A flat, and I'm like, come on, man, save some of that for the rest of us. I've had ear training things so I can identify chord progressions and other things like that, but I usually will need to take some time to figure out what I think the key is, and then I'm probably going to be one or two off. How good are you at identifying songs that you know that you like? Would you be able to identify, say, an Emery song and sing it before hearing it in exactly the right key?
Yes.
Something that I've heard is commonly the case with people with perfect pitch is that you know everything, but you might not necessarily know how to express it or the correct name for something. I knew a girl that played the violin, had perfect pitch, and she had no idea what notes she was playing. I don't even know if she knew what the tuning for each of the strings was. She just picked it up and started playing something and it sounded incredible. I did DTS with a guy that I think had perfect pitch, but he just never knew what he was doing. Okay. He could just play a guitar and sing and all that type of stuff. But I knew a guy that was in a band as the drummer in a punk band. He has perfect pitch, and the singers of his punk band are not that great. And that always boggled my mind. How do you feel about people that can't sing, that put themselves out there as if they can sing? Is there some kind of turmoil that you experience when you listen to them?
Yeah, I think they're delusional. If they think if they know they can't sing and they try to sing, and because like, they need a singer, then that's a little better. But if they're going up, and you know they either they sign up or they think they have some talent and they don't, and no one isn't too and people are too nice to tell them, you know, like I'll always be the first one to say your guitar's out of tune, and I'll tell you which string it is and which, you know.
That's incredible.
And
yeah.
And it's really frustrating to me because there's dissonance and I can hear it even if it's just a few cents off.
Yeah.
And I know it makes me sound kind of harsh, but I would get so frustrated. It's getting better. Like, there's more grace now than there was, but I remember at the beginning it was really frustrating, mm-hmm. and I never knew why. You know what I mean? Like, I would always hear, even when I wasn't the most experienced musician, I'd always hear out-of-tune guitars, and it would frustrate me.
Yeah.
And actually anger me, and I showed it, you know?
Yeah.
And
why can't you hear that it's out of
exactly,
tune?
Exactly. It's and why it's like you fix it's it? Like yeah, it's like they're doing it on purpose. Yeah. And I take offense.
Just to torment you.
Yeah. And people actually used to do that. They used to they used to detune my guitars without when I wasn't looking or like when we were playing in a band and they'd like just like tune it down a little bit, and I was like, no. And like, because you'd play and like especially in open tunings where you need all your notes to be the right notes, yes. otherwise you can hear it,
yeah,
right, and other people just can't. And
yeah,
it's one of those funny things that you don't know you have until you realize that not everyone has that, you know, like that thing, like not everyone has music going on in their head,
mm-hmm.
not everyone can just pick up a guitar and who's a guitarist and just play along to a song or drum to a
mm-hmm.
certain drum beat. And it was really, it's kind of humbling too, and I kind of blame God for it, and I use that word blame very purposefully.
Yeah.
Because I feel sometimes like it's annoying to people
mm-hmm.
and to myself, and I just need my guitar in tune, mm-hmm. and I'll be happy.
Yeah, no, I definitely need the guitar in tune too.
Yeah.
I do not have perfect pitch, but I have a good ear, and I've always been able to figure things out and come up with melodies and everything on the piano and all that, and I can identify when somebody that is singing is out of key.
Yeah,
I just don't have the ability to. Maybe I haven't had enough ear training. Maybe I could almost get to your level.
I have a theory that
ear training.
Everyone could do what I do, right? I think I'm more.
Some people are born with it.
Endowed,
others achieve it.
I guess. With that ability,
yeah.
I don't know.
Do you feel like you have some kind of obligation to be a musician?
Yes, for sure. There's no other profession or career path that I would take because of this. What you call a superpower?
Yeah.
But I reckon that you or anyone who has musical ability, or because I believe that some people just will never get it.
Yeah.
Some people are tone deaf. Right, and will never understand that. But I feel like people like you, who have a good ear, could have a great ear, even like perfect pitch, maybe, eventually, if you trained it.
Yeah.
But I do think people have natural giftings towards things. Mm-hmm. Like I have a naturally attuned ear to music.
Pardon the pun. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So with that, like it comes more easy to
mm-hmm.
me. Than it would first say, you.
Yeah.
I guess because I don't know. I couldn't think of
the
anyone.
Way you said that just comes
you,
more easily
Ryan.
To me than say, you. right in the dignity.
I'm sorry, Brian.
Man. Okay, so what I'm gonna bounce off your theory here.
Yeah.
And I think you're very right in saying that. People could achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just like you can achieve, let's say, very good grades in mathematics at school.
Yeah.
Some people are natural math geniuses.
Yeah.
And they can figure out any problem, and they don't even have to learn the formula. They just know it. They know how to fix it.
Yeah.
And then you get the second tier that like it, but they have to study and they find enjoyment in solving it.
Mm-hmm.
You get the majority of people that falls into this, I don't really like it, but I will do it because I know it's beneficial.
Mm.
And then you get some people that have no hope and
yeah.
they will never learn how to do it. And they don't think like that.
And that's me. And my brain compensates with that, with being sort of intelligible with music.
Okay.
And I feel like I excel when I have a guitar in my hand.
Yeah.
But if you put a pencil and paper with math equations on it, and I will do all right, you know, because I actually enjoy math. I enjoy that they're are actual answers, and it's not like a, you know, like it's not like it could be whatever. It's not a relative thing.
Yeah.
It's actually
English,
like
yeah.
there's an equation, and there is a exact amount
yeah.
that comes out of it. And there's something I like about that, I guess. And it's weird because
mm-hmm.
it's paired with this like really artistic, creative side. But I don't excel in it, and I will never excel in math
yeah.
or other subjects in school. I will
mm-hmm.
always, but I will always excel in music because naturally I'm gifted that way.
And you started singing when you were 2 years old.
And yeah,
and
I always could sing a melody and have it kind of, you know, be on pitch. And
yeah.
I was, you know, like the strongest singer in my grade 2 choir.
Yeah.
And from there, like I've been singing not professionally, but as a hobby ever since. And
mm-hmm.
but when I picked up, it was almost like I was found when I picked up a guitar.
Hmm.
It was the weirdest feeling of belonging, of like, this like just feels really natural.
Hmm.
And from there, it moved into electric guitar, then that moved into piano, then that moved into bass, and I started understanding scales and chord structures
yeah.
and minors and majors and fourths and fifths and
mm-hmm.
You know, all these musical terms in my head, but didn't have the terminology.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea what a pentatonic scale was,
yeah.
but I could hear it. I could definitely hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And then learning the terminology later, it all, like, made sense in my head. Boom.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's this thing that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
that I always do.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really good, no matter what note I play.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, these tonics, or, like, whatever, like, the nice-sounding notes that I play,
yeah.
They actually have a name to it, and there's actually...
Yeah.
Right, because music has structure, like it does, like it's not just like this vast, I mean it is, but there's always going to be structure to music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a beginning and an end to a song, and
music, like every art form, has rules.
Yes.
But those rules can be broken on occasion.
Yes, but they are there.
They're there for a reason.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like saying, like, yeah, you could go outside the coloring box, and that could work. But most times it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? And most times people don't know that it doesn't work. And people
mm-hmm.
just don't realize that the structure that they're going off of.
Yeah.
I know some people who don't know any scales, but they can hear it. And they'll play the scales anyway, but they have no idea what they're doing. They
yeah.
just know that it sounds right.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what people will do.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, I learned what sounded right. And I played what sounded good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, what other people would play. Because I would hear it and be like, huh. That sounds nice. That is, you know, melodically correct, I would say.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as you get into more music, you hear about dissonance and certain chords that are kind of, you know, weird sounding.
Diminished.
Yes, exactly.
Stuff,
diminished.
Yeah.
That's the word. And it was cool, like how you could use those to just sort of color in, you know, like outside the coloring.
Yeah.
And outside the lines and. And I just sort of used that and then it became exploring for me.
Yeah.
Right? It first started like, okay, like dipping a toe in, and then once I figured it's like, oh, whoa. And then I just ran in.
Yeah.
And then just started swimming. And since then it's felt like that. It's felt like I'm just, you know, I'm always hearing music and I'm always hearing sounds. And again, that's another thing that not a lot of people, regular people, I guess I would say,
mm-hmm.
like not me and you don't have, like, we, like, other people don't have music going on in their head all day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Other people don't tap their feet all the time because they got a beat in their head that they just have to get out.
Yeah.
Or a riff in their head that they just need to play.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, not a lot of people have that. And it's just kind of interesting how we're in that sort of subgroup of people, like,
yeah.
very small population
mm-hmm.
people that can actually do that.
I feel like I'm in an even more specialized group of people that can turn that off.
Mm.
I can
and
turn
think
it
analytically.
Yeah, exactly. So then that means if I want to let it go and feel the music, then I can do that and I can come up with something good.
Yeah.
But then I can rein it all back in, or even just turn on my detective brain and figure out what I'm doing and why it works. And so I write lyrics sometimes, and then I look at them objectively and think, I'm doing a a double meaning there, a wordplay there, and that's a reference to this other part of the song, and I didn't even realize I was doing it, but I can recognize it after I've done it, sometimes in the moment. But I used to never have an iPod. I got my first iPod when I was 16 and a half. And for the first half of the year that I was in year 11, I would sit on the bus by myself with my head against the window, and I would just sing to myself because I can just play CDs in my head. And and it's really fun because I think it all comes down to my memory. My memory is such that I can... I remember how it feels with that particular combination, and I can recreate that in my head. And eventually my friends told me, you need to buy an iPod because we're sick of you singing out loud. So then I got one, and I actually still have it. It's right here in my bag. It's an iPod Nano. It's one of the ones that has the video camera. This is the sound of me rummaging through my bag to get my iPod Nano. Oh, wow. It's nice and thin, has a video camera that nobody ever uses. Whoa. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. But it served me faithfully over the last six, almost 7 years. That's pretty cool.
Songs on here.
Thank you. The songs change with time. But something that doesn't change with time is my love and affection for all things outdated. Because I've had to make do with them. And also what doesn't change with time is my love and affection for the listening audience of Pastor's Middle Kid. Because I'm all about the fans on this program. Not really. I don't know if this type of episode was requested by anyone except for me.
No one's listening. No. At this
point. Everyone has tuned out.
Moved on.
Tuned
out.
Yeah.
You had to.
I did have to.
Yeah.
Well, if you've managed to make it this far to the end of this episode, this riveting discussion about all things music production wise and Microsoft Paint and perfect pitch and synesthesia, then I commend you.
Good on you.
Yeah.
You win.
You deserve to have the best day of your life today, if not tomorrow. Okay, but we will wrap that episode with Tristan Harris up there. This song coming up right now is called The Less You Say by Emery from the album You Were Never Alone. And Tristan and I are very big fans. Yeah, if you want to start singing in that key, we'll just pick it up where you start from.
Sure. You ever catch yourself just thinking of a way to get out? It's like a reflex motion. The words slip in and leave a taste that you let linger for days inside your heart. We fell asleep just like before.
Subtle sequence, but you force this on us like we shouldn't care. The feels that they will find us in a marked end. Now the end is here. We fell asleep just like before. You said I can't do this anymore. You better run, you best not say. They catch you here, this all goes away. Change your